Welcome to Episode 20 of Practical Defense, Vehicle Safety, Part 1. Welcome back to another episode of Practical Defense. I am your host, Alex Addicks. In this episode, we're going to look at vehicle security, and we'll cover the full gamut from what to keep in your glove compartment, to emergency kits, to what to do in accidents. Now, in the next full episode, episode 21, we'll continue the discussion and we'll cover things that you can do to make your car less of a target and ways to secure your personal information if your car is broken into or stolen. Before we get into the meat of the program, you might have noticed some sound changes in the show. I've been experimenting with some new recording equipment, and sometimes successfully, and sometimes not so successfully. The original microphone I used started to die on me, and rather than just cutting out, the sound quality slowly degraded, which is why some episodes sounded really echoey. So what I did was I sent the old gear back out to be fixed under warranty, and then I purchased some new gear in the meantime. Now for the tech heads out there, you can find the new hardware setup that I'm using at my site at alexhaddicks.com/podcast, and all of the goodies are listed there at the bottom of the page. Okay, so on with the show. Vehicle Safety, Part 1. Let's start with some of the safety equipment that you should carry in your car. Now, these are items that have everyday uses and immediate or emergency uses, and so they should be carried someplace easily accessible. Now, later we're going to go into other items that you might need, but not immediately, so they can be stored in a bag or a backpack in the trunk of the car. Now, in your glove compartment, we like to carry the following items in our cars. Disposable latex or vinyl gloves. These are super cheap. You can get a bag of 10 for less than $10 at a hardware store or grocery store. And they are invaluable for hundreds of reasons, from quick carb maintenance where you don't want to get your hands dirty with grease and gunk, you know, just like filling your air tires at the service station, to an actual emergency where you don't want to expose yourself to bodily fluids. If you use them, and I do, just be certain to replenish your stash. Something else that we like to carry is a multi-tool. Now, this is the classic Leatherman or Gerber tool that has real uses and real utensils, like pliers and serrated cutter and lock blade and screwdrivers. This is not your Swiss Army knife. This is an actual tool that you can use to make actual repairs on your vehicle. And they run from $50 to a whole lot more for some of the more expensive versions. The basic one is probably all you'll need for your emergency kit. Something else is a whistle. And this is kind of self-explanatory. We carry the high wind emergency whistles that can be heard over helicopter engines, and the brand name is called Windstorm. It comes without warning. It says, extremely loud, this is not a toy, keep out of reach of children. It'll set you back about $6. Something else that I like to carry is a magnesium fire starter block. And you can get these in camping stores. It's a block of magnesium with a strip of flint attached to it. And what you use a knife blade or something else that you can have to scrape the magnesium block to create about a quarter-sized pile of shavings. Then you use something metal to strike the flint near the pile to ignite the shavings. And boy, does this work. You need to stand back because this creates a super hot blast that'll ignite, you know, really damp wood and leaves and, you know, even your tires if you need to create a smoke plume to attract help. They run about $7. Now, you also might want to store this in the bag in the trunk, but I like to keep it with my multi-tool because, you know, you need one for the other, so I like to keep them together. You should also keep a small amount of money in the glove box, but it should be concealed or at least not easily identifiable for reasons that we'll go into a little bit later. You know, $20 in mixed bills should be enough in an emergency, either to buy some food, buy a little bit of gas, you know, pay for a cab, or, you know, just pay for help. The other thing that we like to carry are chemical light sticks, and you've heard me talk about these before. They're cheap, you know, the military spec ones cost about $2 a piece, and they provide a ton of light for 8 to 12 hours before they start to dim. I mean, they're full capacity for 8 to 12 hours. Normally when we have them and we play around with them at night, sometimes, you know, when the kids are over, we let them play with them as toys, because it's really fun at night, but even the next day, they're still glowing slightly. Now, these aren't as bright as a flashlight, but they will outlast the most batteries of the flashlights. Another thing that you might want to consider carrying is a small notepad and pencil or space pen. Now, this is for notes, everything from, you know, recording accident information to, just your general thoughts or directions or just about anything. You'll never know when you're going to need to write something down. Now, I like to use pencils because they're reliable. I found that pens leak or melt over time or even freeze if they just sit in the glove compartment. Now, remember that I live in Southern California in the desert, so the inside of my car and glove box can break 200 degrees in the summer sometimes. And I found, plenty of pens melted and leaking and oozing and creating a giant mess in the back of my glove compartment. Now, the one exception is the Fisher Space Pen, because those have extreme operating temperatures and are much better constructed than your average Bic pen that, is really pretty cheap. So, pencil or space pen. And if you ever really need to sharpen the pencil, you can always use your multi-tool. Some other items that you might want to keep handy up front with you are a good flashlight. Now, I carry a 4D cell mag light in the door of my car, in the driver's side door. Now, it's big, it's heavy, it's well constructed, and it casts a lot of light. Now, if you need to see something under your hood, under the car, you need light to change a tire by, this will give you enough light to work by. I also have an orange traffic wand that fits over the end of the mag light like a hood. Now, this is useful if you need to wave down traffic in the event of an emergency or an accident. Something else that's good to keep is an escape tool. Now, these are tools that have seatbelt cutters and window breakers on them. And I've seen them in a variety of formats. One of the most common ones is a hammer form. Jim Wagner has a new escape tool in a folding knife format from Boker. Now, it's called the Rescue Folder, and it has a seatbelt cutter, a window breaker, and a serrated cutting edge. This tool needs to be readily available to you and your passengers, so you might want to keep it in the center console of the car. In the trunk, you want to carry more emergency gear that hopefully you will never need to use. You should store these items in a backpack for easy portability. Most of us plan our emergency kits, things like food and water and other survival gear, around our homes. The problem is, we are away from our homes over half the time. 5 days a week, we're at work from 8 to plus hours, plus drive time, not to mention out running errands, going to and from the gym, taking care of the kids, just tons of things. That means that there's a greater than 50% chance that when things go pear-shaped, we're going to be away from home. I've had a request from a listener to run a disaster preparedness series, so I'll be putting that type of information together for a future series of episodes. So even if you have a home emergency kit, you're only half covered. So what you need to do is put a travel emergency kit together for your car or other vehicle. So here are some items that you might want to include in your emergency kit in the trunk of your car. A pair of walking shoes. Now, these can be an old pair of tennis shoes or hiking boots. If you need to walk somewhere, footwear is critical. In most cases, a man's okay in his business shoes, but a woman's dress shoes or heels or sandals are pretty much worthless for any significant distance. Now, just remember 9/11 in New York City, when, after the collapse, you could see shoe stores handing out tennis shoes and walking shoes to women who were on the street and had to walk away. So the next time you've worn out a pair of workout shoes, don't throw them away. Just toss them in the truck for your car for emergencies. A first aid kit. Now, there's no brainer there. Now, there are even first aid kits specifically designed to be stored in cars, and they're not that expensive, and they have a lot of good little items in them. Now, something that a lot of people don't think about is bottled water. Water is your most precious resource. You need it to survive any length of time, and even if you don't need it, your car might. In a pinch, you can use it to refill your radiator if you overheat. So try to keep at least 1 gallon in the trunk, which is about 4 liters. Now, from personal experience, every so often, maybe every year or so, you should rotate your water out. The water, because of storage reasons, say that it's only got a certain shelf life. Second, and I've had this actually happen to me, is that water I've stored in the car for, several years, with the movement and shaking of the car, it actually wore out a hole in the side of one of my water bottles, and I wound up with a gallon of water spilled throughout my trunk. So what you might want to do is periodically, like every year or so, check the conditions of your bottles and make sure you haven't worn a hole in them. Food is another issue if you get stuck someplace for any length of time. And this can be from a simple overnight because of the weather, or if you get stranded. And I have a big story on this a little bit later. Now, for the overnight, this winter, it just happened to my sister-in-law. She got stuck on a mountain pass overnight with no food. Now, she was coming over the Grapevine, which is a major thoroughfare here in Southern California. and the highway patrol had shut down the pass in both directions just as she reached the top due to snow. So she had to sleep in her car at a rest stop overnight until they cleared the road the next morning. Now, because there were so many people that were stranded there, the vending machines at the rest area were quickly emptied, and she went hungry for the night. And she was also cold because she didn't have any blankets. What I recommend carrying is some MREs. These are the military meals ready to eat. Back in the old days, they were called sea rations. Now, each pack contains a full meal, which actually is pretty tasty, and has between 1,200 and 2,000 calories, which is enough energy to get you through a day. They're compact, you know, made to be carried in pockets, and have a shelf life of up to 10 years. Now, we carry at least three of these of the 2,000 calorie kind in our trunks at all times. You also want to consider carrying a cell phone charger. Now, the last thing you want to have happen is for your cell power to die when your car is out of order. And you can't always assume that because you're with your car, you can always charge your cell phone. When things go from bad to worse, you want to be able to call for help. Now, there are different types out there, including some hand-cranked, some solar-powered, and some adapters that pull power from standard batteries. There are tons of kits that come with all sorts of connectors that fit all major cell phone types, and there are a bunch of reviews out on the web. You can find some great reviews on CNET.com. Most are small, and they're about the size of your fist. You also want to include a small box of disposable filtration masks, and these are also called respirators. This is useful for smoke or dust, but they're not good for chemicals like a chemical attack. Again, think 9/11 or, you know, brush fires. Now, most of these masks will only be at maximum filtration for about 20 minutes, and then they start to degrade. You can buy a box of the N95 masks for less than 10 bucks at a hardware store or even the grocery store in the cleaning aisle, and 3M makes a ton of different types. Now, I've actually been in situations where I've actually needed these. There are tons of forest fires and brush fires going here in Southern California, and for a couple of days when we were driving around, it was like it was snowing. There was so much soot and dust and ash in the air, the streets were covered, the cars were covered, you had to drive with your headlights on and windshield wipers going. So those masks came in very handy at those times. And of course, you want the standard flares or road reflectors. Again, these are common items for any car emergency kit. Another very common item are jumper cables. And this is, you know, the invent you need to give or receive a jump start of a car. And you also might want to throw in a can of Fix-A-Flat. And what this is, it's a can of goop or foam that you spray into your tire in the event you get a flat. Now, it's not a surefire tool, but it will work for most flats and even inflates the tire some. And it just might be what you need just to be able to get off the freeway and to a service station. And the last item, well, maybe not the last item, but the last item I'll list here, is space blanket. Now, these are compact. They're only a few square inches or centimeters when they're wrapped up. They're really warm, and they're reflective, and they're very inexpensive. You might want to toss in a couple of these because they have a multitude of uses in an emergency. They can be used, you know, as a blanket to keep you warm. They can be used as a reflector to attract attention if you're stranded. And they can even be used and mounted as a sunshade in case you just, you know, it's hot outside and you're stranded and you need shade. They cost about $5 each. Now, I'll briefly go over a story here about James Kim and his family, how they got stranded. You can find the full story on this, James Kim, on Wikipedia. Now, James was a producer for CNET, and he and his family were driving back from Washington to their home in San Francisco, and they got stranded in the Oregon Mountains. And basically, they were gone missing, and there was a huge search party, and they were stranded for almost 2 weeks. Now, after a huge intensive search, they did rescue the wife and the two children. Unfortunately, James did not survive. He left his family at the car and tried to hike out to get assistance. And they found him a couple of days after they rescued the family. Again, you can find full details on the whole story on Wikipedia. But the point of the story is that these people were just out on holiday. They had just gone to visit some relatives in another state, and they were driving home, and they got stranded. And they got stranded in a situation where they needed food. Apparently, they had enough water because they could melt the snow. But they had no cell coverage in the mountains where they were. And, you know, it was just a bad situation that happened to people that weren't expecting it. So having an emergency kit in your car may not be such a bad idea. Now, if you ever do become stranded, most experts say that you should stay with your vehicle. Switching gears a bit, let's take a look at things when you're actually driving. In episode 19, we spoke with Dr. Rex about road rage, but there are other hazards out there on the roads. One is fender bender setups. This is when someone deliberately collides with you in order to get you to pull over and get out of the car, and then they can attack you. Remember that you are obligated to exchange insurance information with the person you collide with, but you're not actually obligated to get out of your car to do so. Now, if you're a lone woman, you might want to consider exchanging information through your window. And of course, this is if it's, you know, safe. Use common sense. If your car's on fire or if there's some sort of gas leak, then it might be better to get out. But if it's just a small little fender bender and you're worried about the person that may be coming up, use your own good judgment and gut feelings on whether it's safe or not to get out of the car. But again, if it's safe, leave the engine running so that you can escape. You know, don't get out of the car. Keep all the doors locked. Now, you don't have to roll the window all the way down to speak with them. Keep it up all the way or just crack it so that you can exchange information. If he says you need to get out of the car and see it, you know, tell him that you'll check it later. And then after you've exchanged the information and this person has driven away, then you get out and look. And if at any time you think things are suspicious, call 911. And if you think the person means you harm, if they start getting angry and violent, or you think they might be drunk or driving while impaired, you know, definitely call 911. Now, I actually have a friend who was set up in a fender bender setup. He was driving down the freeway, and he got a slight rear end. It wasn't a huge crash, but it was a good solid bump, enough to make him want to, you know, pull over to the side of the road and exchange information. So as he was getting out of his car, there were three guys in the other car, and two of them jumped out immediately and rushed him. One completely just cold cocked him from behind, just smacked him upside the head. And the other one circled around to try and get behind him. He was stunned, but he had enough sense to see the guy, and he lashed out with a rear kick and kicked him as hard and as fast as he could and caught the guy full in the belly. And it just dropped him. Now, at this point, the other two guys stopped. And they came up and they pulled their friend away and dragged him back to the car because he was practically unconscious. And then they drove away. And Paul has no idea what they were after. They never spoke a word to him. They never said anything. They just immediately got out, attacked him, and then when he turned out to be a hard target and he fought back, they left and they just drove away. Now, Paul was not looking for a fight. He wasn't looking to defend his car. He would have given them the car if they had just said, hey, give me your car and walk away. He would have done so. But they didn't even give him a chance to do that. As soon as he was getting out of his car, they just jumped him and attacked him. Fortunately, he had enough sense and was, you know, slightly trained in martial arts. I think he had a green belt in some Chinese style, but by no means a martial arts expert. But he had enough training so that when attacked, he immediately moved to defend himself, and that's probably what saved him. Now, for normal accidents, real accidents, not setups, you want to make sure that you take pictures. You know, back in the day, we used to say to keep a Polaroid or a disposable camera in your glove box for accidents. Now, you can just use your cell phone's camera. Document everything. You want to document your car, the other person's car, the other driver, and maybe even take a picture of their driver's license in addition to writing down all the information. Now, I say take pictures of the other person's car because I've had a personal experience where I rear-ended somebody and there was no damage to the other car. And then 3 years later, when it's finally in arbitration, I found out this person, this little old school teacher that I rear-ended, had claimed all this massive damage to her car. There was none. I rear-ended her and I had slammed on my brakes. And it was fender bender. I mean, it was really small. We were in stop-and-go traffic. But I hit the brake so hard that the front of my car dipped, and I caught her bumper into my grill. So it punctured my grill and punctured my radiator. But there was no damage to her car whatsoever. And yet, 3 years later, I'm sitting across the table from her, and she's claiming thousands of dollars of damage to her car when there was none. Now, fortunately, she couldn't produce any evidence that there was any, so that part of her claim was rejected. But it just goes to show you, even the nice little old ladies can sometimes lie and claim damages in an accident that never happened. So take pictures of everything. We're getting close to the end of the show, but before we closed up, I wanted to make sure that I plug first aid training. Now, in America here, we have the American Red Cross, and they have a fantastic training system. It costs about $60, and it takes all day. Just, you know, set aside a Saturday for it. They teach you CPR, they teach you how to use those electronic defibrillators, and they teach you first aid. I strongly recommend taking one of these courses. And I assume that most people that listen to this show are interested in martial arts, And in addition to that, self-protection. But just step back and take a look at what you do. Think about every martial arts class you attend. The possibilities of injury there are endless. You know, there are possibilities of concussions, broken bones, sprains, heart attack, strokes. The list is huge. So take a day to learn how to help others in a non-combative manner. It is well worth your time. Before we close, I have some email to read. Karen from Australia writes in and says, Alex, I'd like to tell you how informing and interesting your podcast is. I've been listening to downloaded podcasts for the past week and have implemented a lot of your tips, particularly the one about buying brand name stickers for doors and windows. I live alone, and one of my safety measures has always been to leave a pair of men's boots, the biggest in stock, at the front door, as it gives the impression that a huge bear of a man lives there. Perhaps you'd like to mention this on a future podcast. Well, absolutely, Karen, and thanks for suggesting an excellent tip, and thanks for the compliment on the show. Now, for women living alone, a big pair of old men's work boots, hiking boots, or basketball shoes sitting on the front porch can be a pretty good deterrent. Now, if you don't want to buy a pair, you can always ask a brother, a father, or a cousin for a pair of their old boots. Just make them as big as possible, because like Karen said, you want to make sure it looks like a very big, scary man lives there. Thanks again, Karen. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddicts.com. I'd love to hear from you. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexaddicts.com. That's podcast@alexhaddicts.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddicts.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.